This is Audible.
Blackstone Audio presents The Bells by Donyell Clayton. This book is read by Rosie Jones. Beauty is a dying flower. Orleansian proverb. The god of the sky fell in love with the goddess of beauty after the world began. Sky showered beauty with gifts of his loveliest objects, the sun, the moon, the clouds, the stars. She accepted his offer to be his wife, and together they had the children of Orleans. But Beauty loved her new children so much, she spent all her time with them. After she refused to return home, Sky sent rain and lightning and wind to drown the first humans. When Beauty protected the people from harm, Sky cursed them with skin the color of a sunless sky, eyes the shade of blood, hair the texture of rotten straw, and a deep sadness that quickly turned to madness. In return, Beauty sent the bells to be roses growing out of the dark and ravaged soil, destined to bring beauty back to the damned world, as the sun brings light. From The History of Orleans. 1. We all turned 16 today, and for any normal girl that would mean raspberry and lemon macaron and tiny pastel blimps and pink champagne and card games. Maybe even a teacup elephant. But not for us. Today is our debut. There are only 6 of us this year. My fingertips leave fog teardrops on the paper-thin glass walls. The carriage is beautiful and clear and fashioned into a ball. I am a delicate doll, poised inside a snow globe. An adoring audience surrounds my carriage, eager to see what I look like and what I can do. A net made of my signature pink flowers stretches along the glass curves in order to tell everyone my name, Camellia, and to hide me until I'm revealed to the royal court. I am the last in line. My heart races with excited nervousness as we snake through the crowds in the royal square for the Butte Carnival. The festival happens once every 3 years. I peer through the tiny spaces between the petals with a pair of eye scopes and try to soak in my first glances of the world, wanting to fold up each bit and tuck it into the cerise layers of my dress. It's a wonderland of palace buildings with golden turrets and glittering arches, fountains full of crimson and ivory fish, topiary mazes of clipped trees, shrubs and bushes in every possible geometric shape. Imperial canals circle the square, holding jeweled boats bright as gemstones and shaped like smiling moons on midnight blue water. They spill over with passengers eager to watch us. The royal hourglass that measures the length of day and night churns with sand the color of white diamonds. The sky and its clouds are made of melting cherries and flaming oranges and burnt grapefruit as the sun sinks into the sea. The dying sunlight flashes my own reflection on the glass. My powdered skin makes me look like an overly frosted piece of caramel cake. I've never seen anything like it before. This is the first time I've visited the Imperial Island, the first time I've ever left home. The Orleans Archipelago is a string of islands stretching like a rose with a crooked stem out into the warm sea. Most of them are connected by golden bridges or can be reached by lavish river coaches. We came from the very top, the bloom, and we've made a long journey to the heart of the stem to display our talents. A breeze pushes its way through tiny breathing holes in the glass carriage, carrying with it the scent of the sky. Salty rain, spiced clouds, and a hint of sweetness from the stars. It all feels like a dream that's held on and lingered past the dawn. I never want it to end. I never want to return home. 1 minute here is richer than 1,000 moments there. The end of the warm months brings change, Maman always said. and my life is bound to transform tonight. The horses tug us forward, their hooves clip-clopping against the cobblestone square. Vendors are selling sweets in our honour, small mountains of shaved ice topped with strawberries the colour of our lips, intricate little tea cakes shaped like our signature flowers, sweet puffs moulded like our bell buns, colourful strings of sugar pinwheeled around sticks to mirror our traditional waist sashes and dresses. A hand thumps my carriage and I catch a sliver of a face. The square is overflowing with bodies. There are so many of them. Hundreds, thousands, maybe millions. Imperial guards push the crowd back to give our procession space to pass. All the people seem beautiful, with skin in various colours, from fresh cream to a drizzle of honey to a square of chocolate. Their hair is in blonde waves or brunette curls or raven coils. Body shapes are petite, round, or somewhere in between. They've all paid to look this way. The men wear jackets and top hats and cravats in a prism of colours. Some have hair growing on their faces in neat patterns. They stand beside women adorned with jewels and draped in luxurious pastel-coloured dresses made full with crinoline and tulle. Intricate hats cover the ladies' hair. Some clutch dainty parasols and oil-paper umbrellas or cool themselves with patterned fans. From the blimps above, I bet they resemble candies in a box. I recognise the more popular looks from the stacks of gossip tattlers left in the mail chest a day too long, or from the weekly beauty scopes Du Barry's daughter, Elizabeth, sometimes dropped between the velvet cushions of the parlour room couch. The Orléans press says strawberry blonde hair and jade eyes are the new windy season trend. All the newspaper headlines read, "Awaken love. Look irresistible with strawberry and jade. Fill your toilette box with Bell-approved rhubarb hair powder. A complexion of lilies and bell rose lips, this season's colours of beauty." The newsies say that's what everyone will want in the coming months. Coins jingle. Hands wave velvet pouches in the air. The spintria inside creates a tinkling melody. How much does each pouch hold? How many treatments can they afford to purchase? How much are they willing to pay? I adjust the eyescope lens, zooming in on excited onlookers, noticing how some of their skin tones have faded, like paintings that have faced the sun too long. How their hair is greying at the roots. The age lines are creasing several brows. It's a reminder of why I'm here. I am a belle. I control beauty. 2. The carriages stop before the royal pavilion. Embroidered chrysanthemums coil around its peaks. Trumpets sound. Bells chime. I adjust the eyescope lens and squint to see the king, the queen, and their daughter. They remind me of the porcelain dolls my sisters and I used to play with as children. The chipped face of the little king in his purple robe, and the queen with a bent crown pinned into her dark hair, both sitting inside a miniature palace made of cypress wood scraps in the playroom. They look the same here, though not as worn, of course. The queen glows like a faraway star, her ink-black skin catching the last rays of sunlight. The king's copper beard hits the waist belt of his robe. Their daughter has her golden hair pinned up like a beehive. I used to paint the arms and legs of the princess doll each time the real princess altered her skin colour, keeping up to date with the scandal sheets Maman used to smuggle past Du Barry. The blimp screens sparkle with her picture. Tonight, she's snowy white like her father, but with peach-pink freckles expertly dusted across her nose. I want to be the one who makes them all beautiful. I want to be the one the Queen chooses. I want the power that comes with being Her Majesty's favourite. And if I can be better than Amber, I will be chosen. The rest of my sisters are good, but deep in my heart, I know it will come down to her and me. Madame du Barry speaks into a voice trumpet.
Your Majesties, Your Highness, Ministers, Comte and Comtesse, Barons and Baronesses, Ladies and Gentlemen of the Court, People of Orléans, welcome to our kingdom's most notable tradition, the Butte Carnival.
Her voice is thick with authority. The noise rattles my carriage. Even though I can't see her, I know she's wearing a hat full of peacock feathers, and she's squeezed her curvy frame into one of her black dresses. Maman told me that Madame du Barry likes to maintain a large and intimidating figure.
I am Madame Anna Maria Long du Barry, Royal Guardian de la Belle Rose.
She says her official title proudly. The people of Orléans would most likely gasp if they knew we called her du Barry at home. Applause rumbles. High-pitched whistles echo. The noise vibrates inside my chest. My entire life, I've wanted nothing more than to be here, before the kingdom.
This tradition goes back to the very beginning of our islands, and to the onset of our civilization. For generations, my ancestors have had the grand privilege to be the guardians of our most treasured jewels.
She turns to her left and motions to the previous generation of bells. All eight of them sit in high-backed chairs and hold bell rosebuds in their hands. Black lace veils mask their faces. The favorite, Ivy, wears a glistening crown on her head. This is the end of their time at court. They will return home once they train us. When I was a little girl, they all played with us between their lessons with du Barry. But then one day, the servants packed the older girl's things. I wanted to hole up inside those steamer trunks and carriage cases, hide within their silk dresses and soft furs and fluffy tulles, to stow away and catch glimpses of the world through a trunk's keyhole. I remember reading about the older bells in the papers after they left. I have their official bell cards tacked to my bedroom wall. I want to be Ivy. I have always wanted to be her. You have to be the favorite just like me, Maman told me before she died. The people of Orléans hate themselves. You must change that. The memory of her words warms me from the inside out, as the sting of missing her swells inside my chest. The favorite shows the world what is beautiful. She reminds them of what is essential. I wish she had lived long enough to be here, watching from the stage. I picture myself living at the palace as the personal belle of the royal family, being the left hand of the beauty minister, and helping her draft beauty laws, experiencing the wonders of the imperial city of Trianon and all its quartiers, swimming in La Mer du Roi, sailing in royal ships, visiting every island and roaming every town to taste all the world has to offer. My sisters will be placed at one of five imperial tea houses, or will stay at home to tend to Orléans' newborn citizens. I will be a vessel for the goddess of beauty. I hold the dream inside my chest like a breath I never want to let out.
And now it is my pleasure to present the newest generation of bells,
du Barry announces. A shiver of anticipation makes my heart threaten to burst. My hands shake and I drop the eyescopes. The crowd cheers. The driver pulls the netted covering of flowers from my carriage. I'm revealed to the crowd. I grab the fans from my lap. Their latches fall open, exposing the fans' primrose pink pattern. I cover my face, then flap and twirl them together so they flutter like a butterfly's wings. I toss them above my head and catch them effortlessly. The hours of lessons pay off in this moment. Whistles and shouts rise up from the throng. I look to the left at my sister's carriages. We're all lined up like a row of eggs in a carton, moving in time with one another. We exchange smiles. The same blood runs through us. The blood of the stars. The blood of the goddess of beauty. Crimson lanterns float into the air. Against a darkening sky, the thin paper burns big and bright with our names. Edelweiss, Ambrosia, Padma, Valeria, Hannah, and Camellia. Fish jump from nearby fountains, changing from ruby to teal mid-flight, teasing onlookers. Their leaps hold the promise of our powers. The square explodes with cheers. Little girls wave bell dolls in the air. Many men and women are sporting monocles to have a closer look at us. I smile and wave, wanting to impress them, wanting to be good enough to be remembered. Dubarry presents Valerie first. Her carriage rolls forward. I close my eyes. "Don't watch them," Maman had said. "Don't ever covet their use of the arcana. Envy can grow like a weed inside you. Be the best, without trying to be better than the others." We weren't allowed to discuss our instructions in the weeks leading up to the carnival, but Amber and I had swapped our dossiers. Her subject needed to be given skin the colour of toasted walnuts, hair full of large barrel curls, and a pretty plump face. Mine had to have skin the shade of alabaster tone from the fire isles, hair so dark it blended into the night, and a mouth so perfect and so red it would be indistinguishable from a rose. We practiced our looks on house servants, perfecting them in solitary chambers under the scrutiny of Dubarry.
"Practice begets perfection," she'd yelled for hours.
I shift around in the carriage as the demonstrations continue, with Hannah following Valerie. My legs fall asleep from having them crossed for so long, and my eyes flutter, fighting my desire to keep them closed. Pained moans cut through the noisy square like silver knives as the little girls endure their transformations. I wince as the cries peak and fall, and the onlookers cheer at their crescendos. Some of my sisters receive louder reactions than others. Some get oohs and ahs. The roar deafens me at times. I love my sisters, especially Amber. She's always been the one I loved the most. We all deserve to be the favourite. We've worked so hard to learn the art of beauty. But I want it so much there's no room inside me for anything else. My eyes feel like they've been closed for an eternity before my carriage trudges forward again. Imperial attendants approach, and their gold uniform buttons catch the lantern light. They arrange themselves at four corners around me, unlatch the hitches, grip the levers jutting from the sides of my glass ball, and lift me off the wheeled bottom like I'm only a soap bubble, thin and weightless. I lock my legs in place and focus on my balance. The men march me to the center platform. I try not to be nervous. Dubarry recreated this entire set inside our home, complete with the gold cylinder where my platform will eventually come to rest. I've been preparing for this day since my 13th birthday. All of the lessons, the lectures, the practice. I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. It's been rehearsed, yet I can't stop my fingers from trembling and my body from quivering like there's a tiny landquake inside my glass ball. I whisper to myself, "I will have the best showcase. I will receive the loudest applause. I'll be named the favourite, just like Maman. I will get to live at court. I will get to see the world. I won't make any mistakes. I'll make people beautiful." I say it over and over again like a prayer until the rhythm of the words erases my fear. The men turn a lever. Gears clink and clang and wheeze. The platform under me rises just above the crowd. Plush royal boxes sit on stilts high above. People lean out of them with eye scopes and spyglasses pressed to their faces, and ear trumpets jutting out like elephants' trunks. Faces look up in wonder and anticipation, like I'm a star caught in a vase, ready to explode. The platform stops. I turn a tiny lever on the carriage floor. The glass ceiling above me cracks open like an egg. The night's warm air skates over my skin like soft fingers, and it tastes even sweeter up here. If I could bottle the tiny winds, they'd turn to sugar dust.
The stars twinkle. I feel close enough to grab one and stow it away in my beauty kiss.
The square grows so quiet and the sounds of the ocean swell. The people of Orleans gaze up at me, the last belle to demonstrate her talents.
Du Barry didn't prepare me for what it's like to be stared at. There are so many pairs of eyes, all different shapes and colours. My heart leaps.
Du Barry winks at me, then taps her full lips, a reminder to smile. The crowd believes I was born knowing how to make them beautiful. They don't know how hard I've worked to perfect the traditions and master the arcana. They don't know how hard I've struggled to learn all the rules.
Now, it is my pleasure to present our final belle, Camellia Beauregard.
She fills the syllables of my name with pride, triumph, and magic. I try to hold on to that and use it to combat my worries. Light shines everywhere. The lanterns and blimp screens and sky candles and a bright rising moon. I can almost taste it, soft and bubbly and sweet, like pink champagne on the tip of my tongue. I face a semicircle of smaller platforms, three to the left and two to the right. 7-year-old girls stand on them like jewels on velvet cushions. They're as different from one another as pearls and rubies and emeralds, showing how uniquely we can use our arcana to beautify. I know my sister's work. Padma's subject has limbs the rich colour of honey bread. Adel shaved her girl's head close to the scalp. The eyes of Valerie's subject twinkle like amethyst stars. Hannah's girl has the body of a dancer, long legs and arms and a slender neck. Amber's subject has a cheery round face just like her own. The other bells have created tiny masterpieces. It's my turn to transform a girl. The king and queen nod at Du Barry. She waves her hand in the air, signalling for me to get ready. I glance up to the heavens for strength and courage. Bells are the descendants of the goddess of beauty, blessed with the arcana to enhance the world and rescue the people of Orleans. Blimps crisscross above me and block the stars with their plump forms and silhouette banners. The last platform lifts directly across from mine. It completes the set of six and creates a perfect half-moon curve. The girl wears a long shirt, which is an excuse for a dress. Its frayed hem kisses the tops of her feet. Her hair and skin are as grey as a stormy sky and wizened like a raisin. Red eyes stare back at me like embers burning in the dark. I should be used to the way they look in their natural state. But the light exaggerates her features. She reminds me of a monster from the storybooks our nurses used to read to us. She is a Gris. All the people of Orleans are born this way. Skin pallid, grey, and shrivelled. Eyes cherry red. Hair like straw, as if all the colour was leached out of them, leaving behind the shade of freshly picked bones and ash. But if they earn enough spintria, we can lift away the darkness, find the beauty underneath the grey, and maintain their transformation. We can save them from a life of unbearable sameness. They ask us to reset their milk-white bones. They ask us to use our gilded tools to recast every curve of their faces. They ask us to smooth and shape and carve each slope of their bodies like warm, freshly dipped candles. They ask us to erase signs of living. They ask us to give them talents. Even if the pain crescendos in waves so high it pulls screams of anguish from their throats, or if the cost threatens to plummet them into ruin, the men and women of Orleans always want more. And I'm happy to provide. I'm happy to be needed. The girl fidgets with the camellia flower in her hands. The pink petals shiver in her grip. I smile at her. she doesn't return it. She shuffles to the platform edge and looks down, as if she's going to jump. The other girls wave her back and the crowd shouts. I hold my breath. If she were to fall, she'd plummet at least 40 paces to the ground. She scoots back to the center. I exhale, and sweat dots my forehead. I hope she earns a few lees for the stress of participating in this exhibition. Enough for her to purchase a square of bread and a wedge of cheese for the month. I hope to make her beautiful enough to receive smiles from people, instead of fearful whispers and frenzied glares. I don't remember being that small, that vulnerable, that terrified. I flip open the beauty cast beside me. DuBarry gave each of us a different chest, engraved with our initials and the flowers that we're named after. I run my fingers across the golden carvings before lifting the lid to reveal a medley of instruments tucked inside endless drawers and compartments. These items mask my gifts. DuBarry's morning instructions repeat in my head. Display only the second arcana and what has been instructed. Keep them wanting more. Show them what you truly are. Divine artists. Three scarlet post balloons carrying three trays float up to the little girl's stand. One sprinkles little white flakes, bay powder, all over her, and she ducks as it coats her like snow. The other dangles a porcelain teacup full of bell rose tea, an anesthetic drink steeped from the roses that grow on our island. It sloshes and dances near her mouth. She refuses to have a sip. She swats at the cup like it's a nagging fly. The crowd cries out as she nears the platform edge again. The last post balloon chases her with a brush smudged with a paste the colour of a cream cookie. To her left and right, the other girls shout at her, telling her not to be scared. The crowd roars. Onlookers try to convince her to drink the tea and wipe the brush across her cheek. My stomach knots. Her constant squirming could spoil my exhibition. A surge of panic hits me. Every time I imagined this night, I never thought my subject would resist. "Please stop moving," I call out. DuBarry's gasp echoes through her voice trumpet. The crowd goes silent. The girl freezes. I take a deep breath. "Don't you want to be beautiful?" Her gaze burns into mine.
"I don't care,"
she yells, and her voice gets carried off by the wind. The crowd erupts with horror. "Oh, but of course you do. Everyone does," I say, steadying my voice. Maybe she's starting to go mad from being grey for so long.
"Perhaps they shouldn't."
Her fists ball up. Her words send a shiver through me. I paint on a smile. "What if I promise it'll all turn out well?" She blinks. "Better than you expect. Something that will make all of this," I wave at our surroundings, "worth it." She nibbles her bottom lip. A post balloon putters back up to her with tea. She still refuses it. "Don't be afraid." Her gaze finds mine. "Drink the tea." The post balloon returns. "Go on. I promise you will love what I do. You'll feel better." She reaches toward the post balloon, then pulls back like it will burn her. She looks at me. I smile and motion for her to tug it forward. She grabs its golden tail ribbons, then lifts the teacup from its tray and sips. I examine her, noting the details of her small, undernourished frame. Fear flashes in her red irises. Her body shakes even more. "Now take the brush," I gently goad her. She wipes it along her cheek, and it leaves behind a milky streak as a colour guide for me. A blimp shines a sky candle over the carriages, and I catch my reflection in the glass again. A smile creeps into the corner of my mouth as I see myself. I abandon DuBarry's instructions, the snowy skin, the black hair, the rosebud lips. An idea leaves behind the warmth of excitement. The risk might cost me, infuriate DuBarry further, but if it allows me to stand out from my sisters, the gamble will be worth it. It will be unforgettable. It has to be. I close my eyes and picture the girl inside my mind like a small statue. When we were little, we practiced our second arcana by manipulating paint on a canvas, shaping clay on a pottery wheel, and moulding fresh-dipped candlesticks, until we were able to transform them into treasures. After our 13th birthday, we moved on from using our teacup dogs and the stray teacup cats that lurked on the grounds to enlisting our servants as subjects of our beauty work. I'd give my room servant, Madeline, bright sea-glass green eyes when the red seeped in. At 14, we changed the babies in our nursery chambers, giving colour to tiny fat legs and little wisps of hair. And just before our 16th birthday, the Queen gave out voucher tokens to the poor to help us train and perfect our skills. I am ready for this. I summon the arcana. My blood pressure rises. My skin warms. I heat up like a newborn fire in a hearth. The veins in my arms and hands rise beneath my skin like tiny green serpents. I manipulate the camellia flower in the little girl's hands. I change it just as I will the little girl, shaping the flower's fibers and veins and petals. The crowd gasps. The stem lengthens until the tip hits the platform like a kite's tail. She throws the balloon and inches away. The flower quadruples in size, and the petals lengthen to catch her. They wrap around her small, squirming body until she's swaddled inside a pink chrysalis like a writhing worm. The crowd explodes with claps, whistles, and stamping. The noise turns into a rolling boil as they wait for me to reveal her. I will be the best. It will be perfect. I love being a bell. I hear the whoosh of the little girl's blood racing through her body, and the thrum of her pulse floods my ears. I say the mantra of the bells. Beauty is in the blood. 3. My childhood is a blur of quick images, like the twirling of a teletrope. I can never quite remember it fully. Not my first word, or image, or smell. Only the first thing I ever changed. The memory appears like a sharp ray of light. Dubarry took us into the solarium in the north wing of the house for a lesson. My sisters and I were folded into the scent of flower nectar and arranged ourselves around a table. Garden servants buzzed about, pruning, watering, and extracting perfume to be used in the bell products. The sun beamed down through the curved glass above me, warming my day dress, turning me into a hot cake. Dubarry gave each one of us a flower potted inside a wire birdcage and instructed us to change its colour and shape. I was so excited that my flower exploded, the petals bursting through the wires like thick tentacles, knocking my sister's cages to the floor and stretching between us like an octopus creature. I have more control now and make fewer mistakes, but I still feel that tickle creep over my skin. When that happens, I know the arcana have done exactly what I wanted. I open my eyes. The camellia flowers peel away from the Gree girl's body like wax, exposing her to the crowd. Voices gasp and cry out with excitement. Bravo! Magnificent! Impossible! Brilliant! The chants make the glass vibrate. My blood pressure decreases. My heart slows to a normal pace. Sweat disappears from my brow, and the flush in my cheeks drains away. The girl wears a small replica of my pink dress, made from the camellia's petals. Her skin matches the exact shade of mine. A sugared beignet fresh from the oil, golden brown and glistening under the lantern light. I've put a tiny dimple in her left cheek to mirror my own. Dark curls are swept high into a bell bun, the hairstyle only we wear. She is my twin. The only difference, her eyes glow crystal blue, like the colour of the water in the Royal Harbour, while mine are an amber brown like my sister's. The other girls gape and point at her in awe. I name my little subject Holly, after the flower that can survive even the coldest Orléans snow and still remain lovely. The crowd thunders with applause. The excited rumble fills up every part of me. She gazes at the reflections of herself, and her mouth falls open. She twirls around like a spinning toy, gazing at her arms, legs, and feet. She touches her face and hair. The blimps drop new screens that capture her image. Her look will only last a month before she fades back to grey. But in this moment, no one thinks about that. After Holly's picture appears in the paper and on the newsreels, I hope a childless lady adopts her. I want her life to change so much she won't recognize it anymore. The people of Orléans love beautiful things. She's now one of them, ready to be collected. Her eyes find mine again. They spill over with happy shock, and she curtsies. I gaze down at my sisters. The moon winks light across the carriages. They stare up at me with heavy eyelids and tired expressions, but clap and wave. Each one of us looks different from the next. Adel is as white as the flowers surrounding her. Padma's black bell bun catches the light. Hannah's eyes are bright and slope in a beautiful curve. Amber's copper hair looks like curling flames. Valerie's figure is like the beautiful brass hourglasses Dubarry turns over to time us when we practice the Arcana. We're the only ones in Orléans born unique and full of colour. The crowd shouts a bell blessing. La beauté est la vie. The Queen lifts a golden spyglass and stares at me and Holly like we're bugs trapped in bell jars. The world goes silent. My breath catches in my throat. I clasp my hands. The Queen sets the spyglass in her lap, and she claps. Her jeweled rings sparkle like tiny stars caught between her elegant fingers. My heart thuds to the beat of her applause. It might burst with excitement. She leans to her right, whispering into the ear of the Royal Minister of Beauty. Courtiers lift ear trumpets, eager to catch any words they can. I wish I could do the same. The beauty minister rises to stand beside Dubarry, and the two of them converse. I'm too far away to read their lips. The princess's fan freezes in front of her. She glares at me so hard it burns deep in my chest. Dubarry motions for me to bow. I press myself all the way to the carriage floor to thank the Queen and the beauty minister and the crowd for watching my exhibition. My chest heaves as I wait the customary minute to show the utmost level of respect. The Queen must have whispered good things about me. That's what I tell myself.
One more round of applause for Camélia Beauregard, Dubarry announces, and for all the new bells. Before the appearance of the evening star tomorrow, as tradition demands, all will know the name of the favourite. Until then, happy guessing and wagering. May you always find beauty.
Women and men wave their gambling tokens in the air. The kingdom's lotteries try to profit from being the first to know the favourite, readying women to cash in any royal tokens earned from the Queen for a chance to dine, socialise, or even have a beauty service completed at the palace by the favourite belle. Blimps release little bell cards that feature our portraits. They shower from the heavens like rain. A smile fills my entire body. I look for my own, but I can't make out a single detail among the flurry. My platform lowers. The little girls watch me descend. They hop and jump and wave. The imperial attendants place me, glass carriage and all, back on the wheeled base. The crowd whistles even louder. Fireworks streak across the night sky, creating the emblem of the bells, a golden fleur-de-lis with a red rose twisting around its centre, like a ribbon of blood. New silhouette banners sail overhead, reminding future customers of our names and faces. For a brief moment, I spot myself high above, my face massive and full of light. My eyes look clever, my smile sly. "Well done, little fox," Maman would say if she could see me now. I feel like one of the framed courtiers depicted in the beauty scopes or painted on Trianon's promenades and avenue boards. The previous generation of bells stands up on stage. They throw their bell roses at our carriages. The roses burst open in full bloom, their petals as big as porcelain plates. I wave at the crowd. I want to stay forever. 4. I used to believe my sisters and I were princesses living in a palace at Maison Rouge de la Butte. I loved the house's pointed roof, the four wings, the endless balconies and their gilded railings and silvery spindles, the soaring ceilings full of house lanterns, the coral pink salons and the wine-red chambers and champagne-blush parlours, the legions of servants and nurses. But none of it compares to Orléans Royal Palace. The carriages sit before the southern gate like a series of pomegranates dipped in honey and lined up on a tray. Red velvet covers cloak the glass. Brass handles and glistening wheels sparkle under the night lanterns. I press my face against the gate. The outline of the palace shines in the distance, stretching out in so many directions it has no beginning or end. I don't join my sisters just yet. Du Barry fusses with Adel. I linger near my carriage at the very tail of the procession, wanting a moment to myself. The excitement of the carnival wraps around me like a pair of arms. Maman's arms. An imperial guard patrols just a few feet away. He walks back and forth in circular motions, like one of the wind-up soldiers in our childhood playroom. My legs tremble and my arms shake. I might be exhausted, or still exhilarated, perhaps both. The roars of the crowd in the royal square taper off, like the winds of a storm drifting out to sea. The blimps and festival lanterns leave light streaking through the night. It holds the promise of something new. We will sleep here. The Queen will announce the favourite tomorrow afternoon. Everything will change.
"You were better than expected," a voice says.
A boy leans against the outside of the gates. His jacket and pants blend into the night, but his bright persimmon cravat burns like a flame in the dark. He doesn't wear a house emblem to identify himself. He scratches the top of his head, loosening his hair from the short knot he wears it in. His smile shines like moonlight, and the soft glow of the night lantern smooths out the hard edges of his pale white face. I look for the guard. He's gone.
"Don't worry. He'll be back in just a minute. I'm not here to hurt you."
"You should be afraid, not me," I say. He could be arrested and spend years in the palace dungeons for being alone with me. 2 months ago, the Queen put a man in a starvation box in the Royal Square for trying to kiss Daisy, the belle at the fire tea house. His portrait filled the newspapers and teletrope newsreels. After he died, the guards left his body, and then the sea buzzards carried it off in pieces.
"I'm never afraid," he says.
It's strange to hear an unfamiliar voice. A boy's voice. A buzzy feeling settles under my skin. The only other boy I've spoken to outside of a treatment salon was the son of Madame Alain, House Glaston, who I caught in the bell storeroom powdering his face and smoothing his lips with rouge sticks while waiting for his mother to finish her treatments. He wanted to be a bell. We were 11 and had laughed more than we'd talked. This boy is more of a young man. Du Barry taught us to fear men and boys outside the confines of a treatment salon. But I'm not scared.
"Who are you? You're not wearing an emblem," I say.
I'm no one.
His mouth lifts in the corner. He moves forward, closing the gap between us. He carries the scent of the ocean and watches me with such interest. It's as if he's touching me.
But if you want to know so badly, feel free to have a look at my name. I'll even unbutton my shirt so you can see the ink better.
My cheeks burn with embarrassment. At birth, Orleans citizens are marked with permanent imperial identification ink that not even bells can cover up or erase. Even if you cut out the skin, the ink will rise again from the blood. Most wear their emblems on their clothing, near the spot where they're marked. I watch him with newfound curiosity. The way he tucks the fallen strand of hair behind his ear, the few freckles he has on his nose, how he adjusts his jacket.
Where did you come from?
The Lynx. I've never heard of such a place. They must not teach you much. I scoff. I've had an excellent education. Is it in the south?
It's in the harbour, he grins. My boat.
So he was trying to make me feel stupid.
You're rude.
I start to walk away. The argument between Adel and Dubarry is dying down in the distance.
Wait. I just wanted to see if the newsies were right.
His eyes are a cedar brown, the colour of trees that grow out of the Rose Bayou waters at home. Navy emblems twinkle on his jacket like newly minted Lees coins from the Imperial Bank.
Right about what?
They say that you can create a person from clay with your arcana. Like magic.
I laugh. Like a court magician paid to entertain royal children with fireworks and tricks. The newsies always call what we do magic, but Maman said the word is too simple an explanation for the arcana.
So, can you?
He fusses with his cravat until it loosens, and the silk tumbles down his chest like a spill of orange champagne.
It doesn't work like that.
How does it?
His eyes burn with questions as he takes another step forward. My heart hitches.
Don't come any closer.
He raises an eyebrow.
Are you going to murder me?
There are laws, I remind him. And maybe I should.
You follow those?
Sometimes. I fuss with the ruffles of my dress. It's forbidden for men to be alone with bells outside the confines of beauty appointments, or to speak to them unless the conversation relates to beauty work.
And what of women? They can be just as dangerous, if not more.
The same applies. We're not to fraternize with non-bells.
Why all the fuss? It seems silly if you ask me.
He smiles like he already knows the answer.
Bad things have happened in the past.
But they don't always have to.
He rubs his chin as he studies me.
You don't seem like a rule follower.
A blush rises to my cheeks. You have a keen eye.
I'm a sailor. I have to...
Camellia?
Dubarry calls out.
What are you doing back there?
I flinch at the sound of my name and pivot around. Coming! I shout. The guard returns. I turn back.
Who are you?
But the boy is gone. The guard gives me a pointed look, but I rush to the palace gates anyway and look left and right. Nothing.
Camellia!
Dubarry shouts again. I go to the opposite side of my carriage. Nothing. Already the memory of the boy feels like a dream you try to remember the very first moment you wake up. Fuzzy, wispy, and out of reach. 5. The beauty minister opens the southern gate, prancing forward in a body-length mink coat. She pets the fur with her red-tipped nails. Peacock feathers are woven into her dark hair. She points up. A gold and white post balloon dances over her head. The House of Orleans' emblem blazes on its side. The Queen's personal post correspondence.
Welcome, my lovelies.
I am Rose Bertain, House Orléans and Royal Beauty Minister to our great kingdom. I have a message from Her Majesty. She slices the back of the balloon with a hooked letter opener. Glowing sparks spray from its rear. She pulls out a tiny scroll boasting the Queen's wax seal. She breaks and unravels it, then reads. My dearest Bells, welcome to my home and the capital of your beloved kingdom. Each one of you was so beautiful tonight. I think the Goddess of Beauty watched proudly from the heavens above. I look forward to determining the best placement for you. Thank you for your divine service to this land. May you always find beauty. H.R.M. Queen Celeste Elizabeth III, by the grace of the gods of the Kingdom of Orléans and her other realms and territories, defender of beauty and borders. I hold my breath until the beauty minister finishes reading the queen's title. Shall we go inside? She says.
Yes!
Valerie blurts out a little too loudly. We all laugh. Her light brown skin turns pink. Du Barry and the beauty minister lead us forward onto the imperial grounds. Guards flank our sides. We walk down a sloping promenade and along curving pathways headed for the palace. Night lanterns wander overhead, leaving footprints of light in front of us. I pass by bright green lawns and ornate trees trimmed into shapes favoured by the gods, flower beds that burst with scarlet bell roses, and snowy lilies shimmering like blankets of red and white stardust. Royal beasts parade along the grass, cerulean peacocks, rosy teacup flamingos, and fire-red phoenixes. Amber looks back at me. I stick my tongue out and race up to her.
You did so well, she whispers.
I try to pluck a flying bug from the waist sash around her sunset orange gown. She sweeps it up and sets it free. So did you. Her pale nose scrunches. The angles of her face curve into a perfect heart shape. Her complexion is as smooth and delicate as a piece of the fine porcelain from the formal dining salon at home. The bell makeup she wears makes her skin look even whiter. A slight wind pulls her ginger hair out of place. Her high bun looks like a split peach on account of the colour.
I messed up with the skin. It turned out too bright.
Her eyes shimmer with tears. It was fine. I trip over my dress skirts, but she catches me. I feel so light and so tired from using the Arcana.
My nerves were a mess. I did everything, Maman.
Her voice breaks in half. I lace my fingers through hers, and they look like twists of butterscotch and vanilla. Amber's sadness is painted all over her. I bury my own. We both did what our mothers told us to do.
You did great. Your girl's hair had perfect ringlets. Maman Iris would have been so proud.
At home, Amber lived next door to me on the 7th floor. Her maman would set up tea parties with sugar cakes and marzipan rose creams just for us. Despite the fact that we were 13 and a little too old for it, I loved them. I'll always remember when Maman Iris taught us how to use the bay powder bundles and how the chalk white sprinkles made her skin look like dried out dirt. In our bell trunks, little stone mortuary tablets are packed alongside our dresses, in memory of our mothers. Amber, you did wonderfully.
Liar,
Amber says.
You didn't even watch. I could see you. You had your eyes closed.
She elbows me. She's always seen right through me. I saw her after you were done. I'll sneak a newsreel and watch the whole thing later. My few childhood memories have Amber in them. Tiptoeing into Du Barry's chambers to see what size brassiere she wore. Hiding out in the nursery where people brought infants for their first transformations. Placing bay powder in our playroom mistress's tea just to see her spit it out. Pushing all the lift buttons to get to the restricted floors. Breaking into the Bell product storeroom to test all the latest concoctions. We've shared our friendship for so long, I can't pinpoint when it first started.
Look at the sky.
I wave above our heads. It's different here than at home. No cypress trees blocking the stars. No hum of bayou crickets or the bleating of frogs. No tiny curling bars on the house windows. No thick northern clouds. Just a clear stretch out to the ends of the world.
The Queen was supposed to stand up after my exhibition, Camille, so I would know, so everyone would know. Maman told me I had to be the favourite. There's no point in being anything else.
My chest tightens. We were told the same thing. I feel selfish for wanting to be better than her, and all my sisters. She didn't stand up for me either, I reminded her. And myself.
I know you did well, even if I didn't see it.
Yes, but you were spectacular.
She throws up her hands.
I've never seen you perform like that.
And you were just as good, so stop it.
We all did what we were told to do, what was in our dossiers. Except you. Turning the little girl into your mirror image, so clever. And I didn't even think to use my ambrosia flower as a little cocoon. It really heightened everything, made it such a reveal. None of that crossed my mind. Which is my problem. I don't do the unexpected. You take the rules as suggestions and go beyond.
She balls up her fists.
Just change the hair and skin colour,
she parrots DuBarry's nasal-toned voice.
Nothing more. Anything else is a waste.
She covers her face with her hands.
It was a show, and you understood that.
I made the cocoon so she'd stop squirming, I say, not wanting her to know that I'd spent a lot of time thinking about how to be better than her, better than everyone. I reach to squeeze her hand, but she moves it to fuss with a flower that's threatening to drop from her bun. I remind her how she never struggles with the Arcana. She earns high marks on each challenge DuBarry assigns. Based on lesson grades, Amber's the top of our generation, always getting perfect scores from DuBarry. If the decision were based on that, she'd be chosen easily.
If we could have shown the first Arcana, I know they would have all seen more of your skills. I say.
Amber is exceptional at manner. She's able to soften even the voice of a teacup monkey, make the most oafish person charming, and give someone any talent they desire. Cooking, dancing, playing the lute or a stringed mizen, as easily as donning a different dress.
I was supposed to be the best. I was supposed to be named the favourite.
We all want to be the favourite, I say. Her eyes narrow.
Don't you think I know that?
Her tone feels like a slap. She's never spoken to me like this before.
Ambrosia, Camellia, you know the rules.
DuBarry hitches up an eyebrow.
You're too old for reminders.
Amber moves 2 paces away, and that tiny space feels like the width of an ocean. We're not supposed to show favouritism with one another. We're all sisters. We're all supposed to be equally close. But I've always loved Amber a little more than the others, and she me. Amber flashes irritated eyes at me. I don't understand her anger. We are, each of us, in the exact same place right now. Shouldn't we support one another? Once DuBarry turns her back, I move close to her again and touch her hand, wanting to fix whatever just broke between us. She brushes away and cuts to the front of the group to stand near DuBarry. I deflate like a post balloon that's lost its air, but I don't follow her. We cross a series of small golden bridges that crest over the Golden Palace River. Newsies lean out of charcoal-black newsboats with their night boxes, trying to capture portraits of us. Their animated quills scratch against parchment pads at lightning speed. They shout our names and ask us who we think will be chosen as the favourite.
You're a little late to place your bets, gentlemen. You'll get no hints here, the beauty minister calls out.
We cross the final bridge and stand before the royal palace. The pink marble building stretches up with turrets so high that if you climbed one,
you might be able to whisper